Hi, everyone. You are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you from Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center in the heart of New York City. Each week, we feature interviews with the coolest culinary personalities around. Joining me today are two folks spending a lot of time at Rockefeller Center, in particular, the new restaurant Le Roc, which just opened here the other month. My guests are pastry chefs Michelle Palazzo and Mariah Neston. Michelle is the director of pastry operations for Le Roc and its sister spots, Frenchette Restaurant and Frenchette Bakery, also in Manhattan. And Mariah, meanwhile, is the executive pastry chef at Le Roc. These two make some of my absolute favorite desserts around. They are lovely people, and I am so happy we get to learn more about them. Michelle and Mariah talk pastry, mentorship, and restaurant life. So stay tuned. Today's show is supported by Whole Foods Market, where you can find lots of Cherry Bomb's favorite female-forward food, drink, and frozen treat brands, including La New Yorkina. La New Yorkina was founded by Fanny Gerson, the Mexican dessert authority who was also a Cherry Bomb magazine cover star. I hope you all saw that gorgeous cover. Fanny really knows her stuff when it comes to Mexican-inspired sweets and treats. She's authored 3 books on the subject and launched La New Yorkina as a way to bring the delicious sweetness and rich culture of her native Mexico to the city she now calls home. Whole Foods carries the mini La New Yorkina paletas in mouth-watering flavors like mango chili, pink limeade, there's a touch of hibiscus in that one, horchata, and Mexican chocolate. I love them all. You can find La New Yorkina and other Cherry Bomb faves at Whole Foods Market locations in the New York area or by visiting wholefoodsmarket.com. Part of Whole Foods' mission is to feature local brands, so be sure to seek out what's local and special at the Whole Foods Market nearest you. One more thing before Michelle and Mariah, I would love for you to sign up for Cherry Bomb's newsletter. Head on over to cherrybomb.com and you'll get our fun Friday newsletter each week, plus special announcements. This way you won't miss out on any upcoming event, great podcast, or other news from Cherry Bomb HQ. For example, we'll be announcing the lineup and ticket sales for our November Cooks and Books Festival very soon. So head on over to cherrybomb.com and sign up. Now, let's check in with today's guests. Michelle Palazzo, Mariah Neston, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Not only is it your first time on Radio Cherry Bomb, but it is your first podcast for each of you.
Slightly horrifying.
And you look like it's your first podcast. You both look like you're being tortured.
It's like a little sweaty. You know, it's just like haven't seen sunlight in a couple days, you know.
Michelle, let's start with you. When did you know you wanted to be a pastry chef?
I think at a pretty young age, I wanted to get into some realm of cooking. I went to cooking camp as a kid, which I don't know where you find that. Some Viking stove cooking camp. I don't know the company that makes, they had like a 3-week incentive for young adults.
They're really based in Mississippi. Did you go to Mississippi?
No, it was in like, it was in Garden City.
Right. Cause I know we've talked about where we each grew up and I was like, it's not really common for a kid from Long Island to go to camp in Mississippi.
No. Yeah. It was in Long Island and I always wanted to either get something involved in the arts or culinary. Either I wanted to go to art school, which I ended up doing, but I kind of fell into pastry just because I felt like those two worlds kind of came together.
Wow. And, yeah. Viking, what a gift you gave to the culinary world.
I need an oven, please.
That's very cool. Mariah, how about you?
Same thing. At a very young age, there wasn't any other option for me. On my fridge at home, there's a paper that I wrote in sixth grade about how much I wanted to be a chef, and it's still there.
So wait, you said there was no other real option for you. Explain that.
I didn't want to do anything else. It was either going to be pastry or savory. At some point, I decided to go on the sweet side, but always and forever.
So interesting. What was kind of the gateway for you? Were you a little kid watching the Food Network? You didn't get sent off to cooking camp like Michelle.
I did do a summer camp at Johnson & Wales, but I think a little bit maybe closer to high school age. My grandmother was an excellent baker. Food is very much part of my family's home life. I don't want to say it started with an easy bake oven, but it kind of did.
It starts with an easy bake oven.
Did you have one?
Of course. Melted so many things on it.
And did you two kind of start with the baked, you know, Duncan Hines, Betty Crocker mixes?
A lot of Duncan Hines. I mean, yeah. Duncan Hines is delicious. it's easy. And I mean, how can you go wrong with Duncan Hines? Yellow cake? Amazing.
I just had a flashback to the boxed brownie mix. I mean, I hate to say this because I'm in the presence of like pastry greatness, but it's kind of hard to improve on those Duncan Hines brownies.
They're good for a reason, right? I mean, sometimes in nostalgia and what you crave, it's like, that's what I want. I don't, you know, you want crappy box cake that's delicious.
It's comfort food for a reason. I would love to know what makes a good pastry chef. Mariah, let's throw this one to you.
I would say the ability to adapt and also to create and to lead. Michelle and I both come from restaurant pastry departments, and the environment is not built for pastry almost ever, except for the kitchen at Laroc. I have everything I could possibly want, but we're constantly fighting humidity, heat, and then egos.
I don't think I've ever had anyone who works in a restaurant come on the show and say, I have everything I want.
I think I have almost everything I want.
When they were planning the kitchen, which I'm very thankful, we kind of got choice of like what we wanted to put in there, which is such a luxury and is kind of a testament to the people we work for and also our hard work, I guess. And so that's
the beauty of getting in on the ground level.
Yeah.
Michelle, what do you think makes a good pastry chef?
I think being creative and working with seasonality ingredients, I find that sometimes pastry chefs, we're kind of limited to the things that we are, you know, we get chocolate from places that are far away or they're not locally sourced or anything like that. So it's nice to kind of have things, especially in New York, we're able to go to the market, I guess, be inspired by those people. And also, I guess, also working in Manhattan, you know, you're being pushed creatively all the time and working with chefs.
Michelle, tell us what Frenchette is all about for folks who haven't visited.
I mean, it's a kind of a classic, a spin on a classic bistro. Again, this like seasonality is super important. The savory team, they change their menu probably 3 times a week, sometimes even more. It really depends on, again, what is dictated at the market, where they're getting their fish from, meat and all that. So I always describe it as live jazz because it's always like on the fly. There's like a new wine. Things are always constantly rotating. So there's like this sense of like, there's definitely a rhythm and an energy to Frenchette that I really admire. And I put that into my desserts as well, because I also want to kind of keep up with that rhythm and flow.
That's a great description. You can feel that when you sit in the dining room there. Absolutely. Yeah. What are some of your signature desserts?
My signature dessert is definitely a pistachio peri bress. It's like the one dessert that I wasn't really expecting to become a thing. And I love choux pastry. It's probably my favorite component of desserts. When we were kind of discussing, I knew we kind of wanted to go into this like classic French plated dessert. And when we developed, we were like, oh, you know, should we go hazelnut? Should we, you know, what type of nut should we do? And we were all like, let's get the best Sicilian pistachios we can possibly find and make this thing like a full experience. So yeah, that pistachio peri bress, it's the only dessert that I kind of keep on our menu. It's been on for 4.5 years or so, like for as long as we pretty much opened.
So that's the only one you don't change?
Yeah. I have a chocolate mousse that sometimes I keep on, but for like a lunch, but predominantly that is the only dessert that I keep on. Everything else rotates seasonally.
It's such a challenge when you go to Frenchette because all the food is so good. The menu is always changing. You want to order everything and you have to remember to save room for dessert.
I'm so impressed with people all the time. I'm like, so you had this like 5-course, 4-course meal that is heavily involved with butter. It's rich food in some capacity. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to end my night with a pistachio buttercream donut thing. And people order dessert. There's always room for dessert, right?
There is always room for dessert. That can be the title of your cookbook or your memoir. There's always room for dessert. Let's talk about the peri breast a little bit, because it's a very specific dessert with a very specific history.
Like most French desserts, it's usually named after something, right? Or like an event or, you know, some princess or something. This one was named after a bike race. So from Paris to Brest, and it's supposed to symbolize a bike wheel. Choux pastry is a cream puff eclair. It's a very eggy type of product. I don't know how to describe
it. Someone told us they like to eat it raw. Who was that?
A lot.
Was it Claire Saffitz who maybe said that? Claire, I apologize if I'm saying that and you've never told me that. But do people eat it raw?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Never crossed my mind. And I love raw cookie dough.
One of our chefs, Lee Hansen, I've never seen somebody eat more raw dough. Like if it's, I'm like, oh, it's a new dough. You got to try it raw.
Like, really can't be good for him.
Yeah. Okay. And it's not a small dessert.
Oh, it's no, like it's a, substantial.
It is like a large donut.
It's a large, large hollow donut that we then top with like a crispy cookie layer on top. And then we fill it with pistachio caramel, like a crunchy pistachio and caramel filling. And then, well, topping. And then we fill it with a very rich French style buttercream, which is just like eggs, sugar, a lot of butter, and pistachio paste.
And not to embarrass you, but I have eaten a lot of desserts in my lifetime, and I've been very lucky to eat at a lot of nice places. I think it's one of the world's best desserts.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
It really is.
It's just, I guess because you get used to like looking at something all the time, and it's so rich that I'm like, I guess we're, like, I love watching, there's like this one gentleman that comes in all the time, and he sits at the bar, and he just eats that. I'm like, are you okay?
I love how surprised you are. It's like you gave birth to this like exceptional child and you're almost surprised. But anyway, if you're coming to New York or you live in New York, put it on your list of must try desserts that are here. You mentioned that you change things seasonally. What are some things on right now?
Right now we have like a version of like a peach Melba, just because obviously we're getting all the beautiful peaches and nectarines and all that stone fruit. And then raspberries are obviously... We always have a Tristar strawberry dessert on this summer. Support our friends at Rick Bishop, Mountain Sweet Berry Farms there.
Why do pastry chefs love that Tristar strawberry so much?
It's the best strawberry. And he also has like Marie Dubois that are, they taste like grapes. And you're just like, this is so magical. So it's an easy thing to want to kind of add to a dessert. We always have like a seasonal chocolate dessert. That one I always feel like is the hardest one for whatever reason.
Interesting. Why?
I sometimes feel like chocolate needs to be chocolate. And then when you try to add fruit sometimes, it kind of messes. You're like, oh, I just want like a really, I mean, doesn't everyone just want molten lava cake at the end of the day? You know, it's just.
That's the most pastry chef thing you could have said. Some chocolate just needs to be chocolate. Yeah. Is that what you said? What do you mean by that?
I mean, if someone just gave me a pile of chocolate, that's all I really want. Like, that's what I crave. And so for dessert, if someone just gives me like a, if I had a chocolate bar, I would just be totally happy with that.
I love that. Okay, let's also talk about Frenchette Bakery, because you know that's another one of my absolute favorites. I think the cannelé at Frenchette Bakery is just one of the best bites in New York City. And also like dollar for dollar, you know, sometimes I think you two are in the fine dining realm that can seem, you know, not accessible to a lot of people. Yeah. And that's one thing I love about Frenchette Bakery, that for a few dollars you can go and have this cannelé that is just a magical bite.
Oh, yeah.
Your involvement with Frenchette Bakery?
So I do all the pastry, all like the viennoiserie. It was a joint collaboration with our head baker, Peter Cedrus, who is definitely the brains of that operation. And then I just creatively help with all of like, so we did the pistachio croissant together. We did the cannelé, all the egg savory. So all of the kind of more of the viennoiserie stuff is a little bit more tied to me.
But those egg savory things for breakfast. Oh my gosh. With the market greens.
Yeah. Delish.
So good.
I mean,
so delish.
A little runny egg. Come on.
How do you go about developing the desserts? Walk us through the process.
It kind of starts with the market, which in the winter times can be incredibly challenging. So I kind of start there. And then I know what our chefs are looking for as far as plated desserts. And I also read a lot of cookbooks and try to bring things from the past to the present and try to do spins on classic French desserts. So it kind of stems from there. And then it becomes like a little mad scientist where you just, you know, you start creating things and you hope it works out. Sometimes it doesn't and it's frustrating and it's a big creative long process. But sometimes I usually have a vision and I'm just going to go for it and figure it out.
And do you have to present the desserts to a team? To your bosses?
I usually do it with Riad and Lee, who are our chefs, which they're super involved. When Mariah and I were pretty much working together, she would be like the first round of taste testers. So that was always like kind of fun. And Frenchette's pastry kitchen is very open. I mean, we don't really have like a pastry area. So there was always a constant flow of feedback, whether good or bad, of people like wanting to taste something. So it kind of always stems from that. And then we have like a formal tasting and then it goes through the ringer of like, oh, let's tweak this or let's do this.
How big is the pastry team at Frenchette today?
4 people, not including me. I have a sous chef who's been, she actually started Frenchette prior to me even working there. She kind of came with the territory. So she's awesome. Shout out Tara. And then I have three other cooks that are wonderful. So,
and this is our embarrassed Mariah moment of the show. Did you hire Mariah?
We were talking about this last night because I was like, Mariah, how did you come into my life? Our chef Riyad Nasser somehow got her number. She was looking for work and it was a kind of like a part-time thing. And she kind of stepped into Frenchette and I was like, wow, this entity of a person that I can just fully rely on. She was just such an easy person to get along with and also creatively work together. So it's been a wonderful working environment with Mariah.
So you didn't hire her, but what did you see in her as a pastry chef? Like what kind of skills and just know-how did she bring to the job?
I mean, I knew immediately she came from a background that she can just kind of walk into a kitchen and she knew how to work a certain way. And I also felt like she could support me in a way that I didn't really have in the past. It was just nice to have somebody that you're like, oh, if I take a day, I know that she has my back and I have her back. And just also creatively, when we started to get to the, like, okay, she's became the pastry sous chef and given the opportunity to kind of like work together on things. I was like, oh, this person obviously has a vision and has a voice. And it was an easy step into a chef position.
The first time I met you two was at this dinner we did with Pellegrino, right? Mm-hmm. It was our mentor-mentee dinner. And you brought Mariah as your mentee. I thought that was really special.
Yeah. I mean, she's my ride or die. Like, it's just nice to have somebody that like you can bring to these events or, you know, just have somebody that is like, you feel like a partner almost. She can hang with the rest of us and, you know.
All right, Michelle, I'm going to give you a break. Yeah. You did very well. Congratulations.
Horrifying.
Not at all. First of many podcasts. I'm predicting it right now. Okay, Mariah, your turn. Are you ready? You look scared.
I am a little scared.
How did the conversation about Laroque start with you?
For me, I think it started with the announcement that we were opening a property in Rockefeller Center. I love Frenchette, but my background was in very large restaurants. And all I said was, I want in some capacity.
And so you threw your name in the ring, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. And they were super receptive to that. And then a few months later, they told me that I had the job. Yeah.
How was Laroque described to you?
Initially, it was a French bistro. The thing that really attracted me to it was that they said that they wanted to give opportunity for anyone walking around in the plaza to come and have a meal at any time of day, which right now seems a little scary, but I like that it was, or it is supposed to accommodate foodies, but also people that are coming to visit New York.
How did you feel about leaving Frenchette and leading your own team?
I was very sad to leave Frenchette. I worked there for 2 or 3 years. I was working side by side with Michelle and that had been so great. And I also made friends. I would probably have friends for the rest of my life with. But I was very excited. I am very excited to lead my team. It's a little nerve wracking, but I see it as a challenge.
What made you feel you were ready to lead a team?
I think it comes with a confidence that comes with experience. Constantly, I feel like I'm faking it till I make it.
You spent a few years at one of the top restaurants in New York City. You still have a little bit of that inside you?
Yeah, of course. I'm constantly reminding myself, even when the situation's tough, that I'm here for a reason and to know my worth and to keep going.
Okay, let's talk about some fun stuff. Yeah. Dessert menu development at Laroque. Walk us through that process.
I think it started immediately when I knew that we had a project opening. With the opening, it continuously got pushed back. So I was testing things for different seasons wasn't. So that was a little bit of a heartbreaker, but we adjusted. But just like how Michelle goes about her recipe development, starts with an idea and then giving that idea to Chef Lee and Riyadh and seeing where they want us to go from there.
What is on the dessert menu at Laroque?
We have a buckwheat profiterole, which is my favorite thing on the menu, I would say.
Why buckwheat? You wanted something a little different, more substantial mm-hmm. than the traditional profiterole?
Yes. Michelle can also say that I was a little bit self-conscious about putting a profiterole on the menu because it is something that in its purest form is extremely simple. And it's just looking a way to give a nod to a flavor that we used a lot at Frenchette and also elevating it to our standard.
Yeah. What's inside that profiterole?
Salted caramel ice cream.
Ooh. So good. It's the best salted caramel ice cream. Honestly, it's so good. It's the only ice cream that I've like dipped my spoon into. I'm like, oh, damn. We all like eat the end of it at the end of service. It's fun.
You look very excited as Mariah was describing it.
Yes, it's so good.
And chocolate sauce on top.
Yes, chocolate sauce on top. That is made with buckwheat honey and Valerona chocolate. And then we also have buckwheat groats that are candied and fried, sprinkled throughout there for a little crunchy bit.
Yum. Yeah.
Then we have the baba.
Lady baba.
Lady baba.
Yeah, we call her Lady Baba now.
What's in the Lady Baba?
It's a traditional yeast leavened baba cake. It's soaked in a simple syrup of genepi. But then the special
part... Wait, you have to go back. A simple syrup of genepi. What is that?
You know, I just threw this together.
sugar, water, a little vanilla, and then a genepi liqueur.
Tell me what genepi is. I don't know what that is.
So genepi is a herbal liqueur. It's similar to chartreuse, but we would say it's sweeter and a little bit more floral than chartreuse.
Oh, beautiful.
So initially, the baba was framed around green chartreuse because we love it so much as a company. But part of being a pastry chef is adapting, and chartreuse is getting very, very difficult to get in the U.S. We took that and figured out how we could make it better with using less chartreuse.
So this is a chartreuse shortage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Say that three times fast.
Those two monks are just like, they're like, it's summer in Italy. We're not doing this.
And isn't there a mustard shortage too? What are you doing in fine dining? Must be really hard.
Mustard shortage.
No, is that made up?
I don't
know. There is a mustard shortage.
<That's so funny.
laughs> All the things you have to keep on top of. Yeah. Okay, what else? Lady Baba, what's next?
And we have a Meunier D tower. So that is a full tower of mini pettiflores and confections. It's meant to be something that you can get with a group of friends or your family and taste a lot of different textures and flavors.
So that's fun. What's the most popular so far?
Definitely the profiterole.
No surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to talk about how you two are different pastry chefs today than when you started out. Michelle, we gave you a little break. We're going to go back to you. How are you different today?
I think more confident. When I started Frenchette, I thought I wasn't even going to work in food anymore. I kind of had like an experience where I was just like, I'm done working in food. So I was coming kind of from a place where I was like, I don't know if this is for me. So then to get the opportunity and kind of go full force in such a way, I think I've gained just so much more confidence. And I always admired chefs that have a particular voice, and you can always see the food that they make. It looks like theirs. So I think I've developed a style now. I know what I look for. I know what I'm naturally attracted to. And then I think just being more confident in leading people, trying to make a better work environment and keeping people happy. In the beginning, it's like you're leading blindly sometimes, and you're in your own little pastry world. And now I feel like I'm in a rhythm and flow. I kind of know what I'm doing a little bit more.
It's nice that you got your groove back
when
you went to Frenchette.
Yeah, which I know. I got really lucky because I know a lot of people get burnt out and you move careers. And I mean, this is all I've done for 14 years. So to get an opportunity like that was on a whim, and it's been a wonderful working environment ever since.
And to have it be so well received.
I mean, I think Pete Wells came in on my second day. I don't think I was even hired yet.
Like, no pressure. Pete is the restaurant critic for the New York Times.
Yeah, it was like full force. And I just think to be jolted like that was just such a wonderful experience, you know, creatively too.
Mariah, how about you? How are you different today than when you started out?
I'm definitely gaining my confidence. But since starting at Frenchette, I think I'm a lot more patient, managing, leading a team. Just remembering that everyone's here, just like I am, to be a part of a common goal and to further education and keep going.
I'd love to know about your culinary school experiences. Michelle, where did you go?
I went to Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. I was straight out of high school. I would say did not take it very seriously at all. I think I was just 18 and just wanted to be in Manhattan and like go out and party. But I think I wanted to do it. So I got along with all of my chefs really well. I went to Italy with one of my chefs. I had really wonderful teachers. So, I mean, I'm sure I was such a pain because it was a little bit of a weird transitional time for me. But I knew I wanted to stick with it. I mean, culinary school, it does teach you how to kind of be in kitchens because, I mean, I can attest as an 18, 19-year-old walking into a professional kitchen, it can be incredibly intimidating. So it just at least teaches you just being in a space like that and how to deal with the stress or that type of environment.
Mariah, where did you go?
I went to the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York.
How did you wind up there?
Actually, it's my grandmother who was very big into baking and an amazing baker. When I told her that I really wanted to bake, she's like, you can go nowhere else. It's a premier school. And she's the first one that brought me there, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So cute. Yeah, that's super cute that your grandmother even knew about that. Like what Michelle said, that it really prepared her for how to walk into a kitchen. What did you take from the experience?
On a technical level, that's something that the CIA is very good about teaching, is all the technique. I think the thing that maybe is always missing from culinary school is about walking into a restaurant kitchen and what to expect. I don't think anything can really prepare you for that. Maybe it is better to go straight for restaurants. There's a labor shortage everywhere.
So you can learn on the job.
You can definitely learn on the job.
Do you think you could be where you are today if you hadn't gone to culinary school?
I think so, but I know that I learn better in a classroom environment. I am very fortunate that I was able to go, but on a financial level, you're like, it's definitely something to consider.
Michelle, could you be where you are today without culinary school?
I think so. If you're not going to go the realm of a culinary school, I think you have to be really diligent about finding a mentor then and finding someone who's willing to teach somebody. You can walk into a kitchen if you don't have somebody that is going to literally hold your hand and teach you a couple of things. Fundamentally, you're going to kind of get lost in the shuffle. So, I mean, even at Shredder Culinary School, because again, I was like a child, 18, I was like 19, you know, let's full industry, full New York City, Manhattan. Finding a mentor chef was like my biggest priority and really kind of starting over a little bit and getting that form back.
Did you find one?
Yes. Aaron Kenigilau, who is my mentor and somebody who I look up to tremendously. She showed me a lot and was super patient with me. And, you know, I did a lot of growing up with her. So to test, you know, she helped me quite a bit.
Where did you two work together?
At Reynard at the Wythe Hotel. I worked with her for about 5 years and she really just transformed my world as far as a chef. She was very much about seasonality and had a completely different style than I was exposed to. And I owe her a lot.
That's amazing that you could say she transformed your world.
Completely.
Great to have someone like that in your life.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
Mariah, how about you? Do you have a mentor?
I would say Michelle's one of my mentors. I definitely could not have gotten to the position I'm currently in without her. She's been my biggest advocate.
Oh, I love that.
Means a lot.
I'm sure it does. A lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, It's easy with her, though. So I was in her shoes not too long ago. So I know what it's like. And just to kind of see somebody blossom is just really rewarding and really nice. So whatever I can do.
I'd love to know who you two admire in the dessert world. It doesn't have to be someone you've worked for. Mariah, who do you love and look up to or love their books or what they're making?
I'm really loving that pastry chefs are taking their platforms and the team behind Bakers Against Racism have taken their platform and their talent and have been able to merge those two things together for a really great message. And I'm really appreciative of what they've done for, I guess, the situation, but also for our industry and showing that we can do more than just put up cake.
They are tremendous. I still don't think they've been fully recognized for what they did.
I mean, I did it during... We were still in COVID. Mm-hmm. I baked like pies out of my own oven. I mean, it was amazing to be able to gather people in a way.
I think the fact that they gave so many of us a sense of community and purpose at a time when, I don't know, I'll speak for myself, like so many of us were just floundering.
Yeah.
And not knowing what tomorrow was going to bring, and the whole industry was just sort of turned upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Did you two also do the Planned Parenthood bake sale this summer that Natasha Pickowitz organized?
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times. Well, we've done it, I guess once.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic, we did the one, and that was super fun. It was a lot of work, but it was such a cool experience. And I really commend any person that is like willing to put in that type of work. Because even just with social media and all that, I just don't have that in me sometimes. And I don't even know how people do it. It's amazing.
And you all show up with the most beautiful baked goods at these things. It's not like, you know, when you grow up and you have a bake sale at school and your mom runs and buys a box of Entenmann's donuts and you can just throw them out on a plate. No, you all show up like it's the pastry Olympics.
Come on, well, it's like we don't interact with each other much. So when you finally see what's up, you're like, oh, this is what you're doing? This is awesome.
A little competitive, but
yeah,
friendly
in a good
competition.
Way. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Who do you admire?
I mean, I love Anne Sophie Peake. I mean, just her style, what she brings to the table. I mean, as a chef, it's just hard to not just admire somebody who just puts out that type of food that she does. And it's just so beautiful.
I've never been to one of her restaurants.
I'm trying to go in October.
Ooh, in Paris?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's my first Parisian trip as an adult. So I'm really looking forward to all of the pastry.
Oh my God, I don't think there's enough stomach space or
not at all.
Time for you to try all the things you need to try.
No. But I'm really looking forward to it.
You're going to have to be really organized. I see spreadsheets. I see lots of things in your future.
Yeah. I just feel like a croissant every like 2 hours, you know? It's just
Off duty, do you prefer sweet or savory foods? Michelle?
Savory.
Mariah?
Savory.
Why is that? Because it's just so much sugar at work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All I crave now is just like, I just want salt. I just want like potato chips. And I mean, we have at La Rock, which is becoming a major issue, is we're up because at Frenchette, you're downstairs in a basement. So you're not like involved with the food as much. But the kitchen for plating up there, you're just like constantly being bombarded with French fries.
Oh, no.
And it's it's like you have one. You're like, oh, God.
French fries and mayonnaise.
Yeah, oh like, my God, and that's my favorite combination.
It's dangerous. And then somebody puts a poivre sauce on at the end of the night. You're like, okay, great. This is what I'm eating.
I am always the one when I order French fries, I ask for mayo on the side.
Yeah, delish.
The best. What's an ingredient a serious pastry chef always has at home?
I think vanilla is like the forefront of like flavoring in a lot of ways in a lot of pastry. I mean, it's like the garlic to dessert, right? To savory or, you know. I mean, I always have like one sad vanilla bean that like I have never used, but I do have always like a good quality vanilla when I do cook.
For those out there who aspire to pastry greatness, what's a vanilla you like?
Ooh, right now, that Norphy vanilla that Valrhona introduced recently it's delicious. Like, it has such a particular flavor to it that's just really a nice quality.
Ooh, interesting. I don't know about that. Mariah, how about you? What's an ingredient a serious pastry chef always has at home?
Butter.
Yeah.
Butter.
Can never have enough butter. Michelle, what's a tool a serious pastry chef always has at home?
If you have room, I would say a KitchenAid. A KitchenAid with the attachments. I mean, you can do so much with one of those. And they last forever.
Okay, good answer. Mariah?
A scale.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
What's your birthday cake of choice?
A watermelon log from Carvel.
A watermelon log from Carvel? How do I not know what that is?
It's pretty much a watermelon flavored like sorbet that's shaped like a watermelon. It's the best.
Okay. Sounds good. Mariah?
I'm going to say not a cake and a bowl of pasta with a candle in it will just make my entire year.
Good to know. Okay. Cheap candy thrill.
Ooh, do we talk about our candy?
We certainly do.
Yeah. I mean, I think it started at Frenchette, but our chef Riyad Nasser always has a bucket of Kit Kats, like Canadian Kit Kat. You could talk about the break because it's a particular point in service.
He starts almost twitching or it's like a blinking motion. And then we need to announce the kitchen. Are you ready for a break? It's a very fun tradition, but we take a hot knife with a blowtorch and we perfectly cut the Kit Kat on our service board. And we all take a break and we cheers with our Kit Kat.
It's every night. Yeah. And it's different type of Kit Kats too.
They have blueberry pie Kit Kats in Maine.
That's so
and
fun.
And I meant to buy a bunch of them and bring them back. Okay, that's... we need to find the blueberry ones. So they're always different ones. So you always have different flavors.
Yeah, we have a full-blown tasting.
Do you have a fave?
I think the classic one is my favorite. The recent white chocolate, the caramelized wand chocolate one, was good, but it was like a good like one biter. Mm. I don't know if you could douse a whole bar, you know, bring down a whole bar, but the classic one, I mean, the milk chocolatey one is delicious.
The matcha Kit Kats are great.
I don't think I've had the matcha ones yet.
Okay, I'm going to buy them and bring them to you all because I think those are great.
Right? Yeah. Like, I have Kit Kats.
Now you know, everybody who needs to get a table at Laroc, now you know how to, or Frenchette, now you know how to get a table.
Canadian Kit Kats.
Oh, right. That was my follow-up question.
American.
How are they different from American?
The quality of chocolate.
Yeah. Is that for real? Come on, it's the same thing, no?
We have one every day.
Yeah.
We know.
The American chocolate has like, it's like the, you know when you have like a Hershey's bar? No offense. Time and place. Hershey's is delicious.
Yes.
But it has like a little bit of like a throw-up-y vibe sometimes, the flavor.
Like, I was going to say waxy.
Yeah, there's just like a flavor in there. Sorry. It's like a thing.
But never has that crossed my mind. But I see the waxy. I know what you mean with the waxy thing, Mariah. That's pretty funny. All right. The Kit Kat ritual. Who knew?
Yeah.
Would love to know, a serious question, would love to know how you are taking care of yourself mentally and physically. And I know that's not easy because if I had to ask myself the question, it's like very inconsistently would be my answer. But we've started asking everybody this question just because, you know, in light of the past few years, it's obvious how important it is. Michelle?
I'm a big advocate for taking the time when you can and also being around loved ones and people that you care about and making that a priority the same way that you make work a priority. At this point, working quite a lot, it just kind of comes with the territory of like opening up a restaurant, being involved with openings, but taking the time to relax and be with family and friends is how I try to mentally prepare, help myself. And then physically, I just try to walk as much as I can. I want to tell myself like I'm going to go to the gym and all that. And when you're working crazy hours, it's the idea of like waking up an extra hour. It's just not in the book. So.
And your job already is so physical.
Yeah. It's you're like standing for hours. I guess taking the time and, you know, enjoying the beach while you can. And that's what we're doing.
Mariah, how about you? I know you've been trying to get some beach time in.
I would say mentally, it's been planning my weekend or my day off early in the week so that I'm working towards something and keeping a positive attitude, as well as keeping, like Michelle was saying, my family and friends really close. Because, I mean, my family and some of my friends who I've known since elementary school have known that this is my dream. And sometimes I just need to be reminded of why I'm in the position I am and to remember that I've been working really hard to get to the point I'm at. And physically,
that one spin class we did.
When was that?
Well, I said I would like come to it, but Mariah did like a couple of days of spin. But it's like, oh, a couple of days of spin class. Look at us. We're really doing it. But
I mean, exercise is very important, but with the amount of hours I'm working at the moment. Maybe take it a little easy, but drinking water, sleeping, the basic human needs for me.
For a long time, and even now, like we try to both support each other. If I have something going on, Mariah will fully step in and be like, I got you. And then vice versa. If she needs anything, it's like all hands on deck.
Yeah, and I would go on to say that, I guess on the mental level, Michelle has been the biggest support because, you know, I'm pretty sleep deprived and sometimes emotions can be high, but she's always been there to have like a side one-on-one conversation just to keep it going.
Yeah. Happy to hear that. Last question, even though I could talk to you two forever. What is your advice for aspiring pastry chefs?
My advice would be probably find a mentor, find somebody that you can grow and develop with. find a healthy environment, make sure that other people in that environment are happy, because it's so hard. It's not an easy life whatsoever. The hours are really tough. I think just finding a healthy environment that you can adapt and you can grow creatively is just super, super important.
Mariah?
I would say to be patient. There's no rush to get to a certain position, but also to, I say it all the time, to write everything down. Yeah. There are recipes that I'm looking for, just one component of one dessert that I would like to, you know, maybe change a little bit that I no longer have because I lost a notebook somewhere along the way. And then also, like, you journal your emotions, you should journal your ideas. It's my advice to young chefs.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. Mm-hmm. I love that. All right, you two, how do you feel? You survived your first podcast experience.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We're going to, like, think about it tonight. We're like,
why did I say that?
Like, why?
Well, I think you two did great. And I hope this is just the first of many interviews that we get to do. I love talking to you both.
Thank you for having us.
So fun.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much to Michelle Palazzo and Mariah Neston for joining me. And congrats on successfully acing your first ever podcast. If you'd like to keep up with all things Michelle and Mariah, follow them on Instagram. Their names are their handles. And if you're in the New York City area, don't forget to check out La Roque right here at Roque Center and Frenchette and Frenchette Bakery. Have one of those cannelés for me. Thank you to Whole Foods Market for supporting today's show. If you enjoyed today's pod, check out past episodes with other great pastry chefs, including Natasha Pickowitz, Claudia Fleming, and Caroline Schiff. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. Our theme song is by the band Tra La La. Thank you, Joseph Hazen, studio engineer for Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center. And thank you to our assistant producer, Jenna Sadu. And thanks to you for listening. You're the bomb.